This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour two, rolling along on a Monday after all of the playoff action. We still got one more game, and that's the Dallas Cowboys tonight against Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. Previewing games last week kind of brought up the fact that the difference between these two quarterbacks is simple. And it's really legacy, right? There's no legacy for Dak Prescott, and there's plenty of legacy for Tom Brady. You want to put these into this game. The reality of it is even though Dak Prescott may have had a 12-5 season, a number of those games he didn't play because he was injured, and Tom Brady and the Buccaneers struggled to an 8-9 record, whenever we get to this moment on the calendar where there is a playoff game, Brady gets the benefit of the doubt, right? Everything that you can talk about with the Buccaneers, they struggle with this, they struggle with that, they struggle here, they struggle there. Yeah, but they still have Tom Brady. And with the Dallas Cowboys, you can talk about their good defense. You can talk about Pollard and Elliott out of the backfield. You can talk about a lot of things that are good, but there's the yeah, but they have Dak Prescott. Because Prescott hasn't built himself anything, and he doesn't carry a playoff resume. The Cowboys as a whole have really struggled over the past 30 years. They haven't won a Super Bowl since Super Bowl 30. They haven't won a road playoff game since 1992. By the way, when sometimes people say that, the real question you have to ask is, well, how many did they play? In the Cowboys' case, it's eight. It's eight, right? So there's a lot of playoff problems that the Dallas Cowboys have had, and it's been leaking into tonight's matchup. History is history, and sometimes it doesn't play a factor at all. But in this case, people are looking at it saying, do I trust one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, if not the greatest quarterback of all time, to win a game with a deficient team, a team that's got some real problems, or do I trust a better team on paper, but they have a quarterback who finds ways not to win these kind of games, right? Which is it? And I think that's the angle. But when take a look at yesterday, for example, with Daniel Jones, people liked the New York Giants going into that game against Minnesota. And a lot of it, again, was probably on the Minnesota side of it, but the Giants with Daniel Jones have done him right, right? They drafted him. They put him with lousy coaches, lousy offensive coordinators. They put him with lousy schemes. And everything that Daniel Jones has, size, arm strength, intelligence, speed, athleticism, everything that he has that made him a first-round pick in the first place, that made people go, yeah, that kid from Duke's pretty good. And then all of a sudden he wasn't good, have now been sort of justified. All of his supporters have been justified by this one game. He threw for over 300 yards, two touchdowns. He ran for over 70. He picked up seven first downs on his feet. Right? His players, his teammates were just in awe. He had an interview where one of his teammates came up to him and screamed into the microphone, "That's my quarterback." It was Sheldon Jones. People are so excited about the way he's playing, and they like it because some of them have been around him for long enough to know that he has talent. It just was not in the right place to shine. And Jones, I'm telling you this, I don't know if they'll beat the Eagles, but I do know this, they're going to give the Eagles a real shot. It's another divisional playoff matchup. The Giants' defense is good enough to create some problems. I think in the end, the Eagles are too talented. And I think in the end, the Eagles will likely win. I might change it as the week goes on. But I don't think the Giants are, well, they're just lucky to get by Minnesota. They'll get rolled by the Eagles. This is a good football team. That was a crisp offense yesterday. And as much as we talked about Brock Purdy and how good of a quarterback and how good of a game he played, the best game of any quarterback this weekend was Daniel Jones. He didn't have four interceptions and had to come off of that like Trevor Lawrence did. Joe Burrow struggled. Josh Allen struggled, right? The quarterback that won over the weekend that had the best game was Daniel Jones. 301 yards passing, two touchdowns, 78 yards rushing, 17 times he ran the ball. Again, the seven first downs on his feet, but he didn't have any turnovers. That's kind of half the battle in and of itself when you talk about these sort of matchups. Barkley played well. They got huge yardage on plays. At one point, they were averaging over 8 yards a touch. Whether a run or a pass, didn't matter. That's how efficient they were. They matched Minnesota's first touchdown in the game. They had a lead, kept it. And for the Vikings, it goes back down to Kirk Cousins, but Cousins actually played pretty decent. The one mistake Kirk Cousins made was the biggest mistake, and he's worth every bit of criticism, was the check down pass on fourth down late. Trying to get 8 yards, he checked it down and tried to hope that there would be enough that you could get, that they could get. You have to take the shot downfield. You have to get the ball down to Justin Jefferson, even if he's covered. And Cousins, 273, two touchdowns, no interceptions, 31 of 39. Those are good statistics. But the one play he made where he didn't force at least a ball into a position to get a first down on that drive, just sort of dump and hope, that's where he's going to get the criticism. But I think I was so impressed with the Giants. So impressed with them. Because it's one thing to have everybody believe in you just because, right? Well, looks like the Giants could go to Minnesota. That was a good game they played a couple of weeks ago, right? You know, they lost by a last-second field goal, but it was a comparable game. It's one thing to have people sort of buy into you, and it's another thing to deliver on that promise. And I think, to me, that's what was important. When Minnesota tied the game in the fourth quarter, and they went 75 yards. And that was the other thing the Giants did. The Giants scored on long drives. They didn't score three touchdowns because they got three turnovers in short field. 75, 81, 85, 75, 75. These were all long scoring drives. And Jones was extremely efficient. And they are a very dangerous team now. But again, I don't want to put them past the Eagles just yet as the week goes on and we hear more about this or that. But the reality of it is that there's a feeling about this team where I think they could make a run to an NFC Championship game. I can't imagine the Eagles being so much better than this Giants team that it's inconceivable. First of all, it's not inconceivable in any situation, and we should know that by now. But we don't, right? I mean, I thought the Bills would roll against the Dolphins. But that was very impressive. And I'm glad, too, because I'm not saying that the previous years that Daniel Jones played weren't his fault, right? I'm not going to go down that road. He played. He didn't perform. You got to sometimes play the cards you're dealt. And he didn't get good coaches. I get that. But I'm glad that a guy who, again, was picked with the number 6 overall pick a couple of years ago, and they didn't believe in him enough, but the owner of the Giants said, we are not giving him all the tools. We've got to give him all the tools. He is now set up for a huge payday. If the Giants can afford him, and we heard Howard Cross last week sort of imply that they might not be able to, but we'll see. But they have given him the opportunity to shine, and he's shown, and that was his best game. And it came when they needed it the most. That was a fantastic performance. Daniel Jones, and he was 24 of 35, but as many pointed out, a lot of his incompletions were smart throwaways, and some of them were dropped passes. He didn't have a lot of terrible throws. What were you doing? Oh my God, that almost got picked. So the Giants were really impressive this weekend. But to me, the impressiveness really lies with some of the teams that did lose. Miami and Baltimore in particular. Seattle had Geno Smith. They didn't go down to whoever else is on their roster. But I got to give it up for Skylar Thompson and Tyler Huntley. Both of them did a really good job in their losses.
And seemingly, I mean, especially for us, I didn't give them a chance on Friday.
Oh, I didn't give them a chance on Friday. No, of course not. Yeah, no.
It's like, God, this is, I mean, two walkover games.
They were the two biggest spreads of the weekend.
Yeah.
The Bills were favored by 13 points and the Bengals were favored by 9.
You know, and the heartthrob kept trying to tell us, hey, don't bury my Skyler. We did.
No, sorry, heartthrob. We didn't, we didn't do it. Think about this. I mean, a 13-point spread, I mean, that's a two touchdown. You're thinking that they're going to win by two touchdowns, even if they're home in a playoff game. I mean, that's, sometimes you don't see 13-point spreads in the regular season against crappy football teams. But there was so much of a feeling of, the Bills are going to beat a team that has shown us nothing in over a month. Miami hasn't shown anything in over a month. They lost, what, five games heading into that game against the Jets? Pulled out the game against the Jets in a battle of field goals at home? And I'm supposed to buy into a 34-31 game? I mean, if you came to me before that game and said that's going to be 34-31, I would totally believe in time travel. There's no way anybody predicted that it would be that close. Now, Philip, to his credit, thought that the Dolphins would fight, but a 34-31 game indicated that the Miami Dolphins, who did not have much of a hope with their offense with Skylar Thompson when they played the Jets, would come alive in a cold weather game, taking advantage of real bad mistakes by Buffalo. And they did. I mean, look, six of those points came on a defensive touchdown. Special teams worked for them. The offense did just enough. Took advantage of mistakes. 17 straight points to answer the 17 straight points that were scored by the Bills. And as I said earlier in hour one, I think Baltimore should be kicking themselves because that was a very winnable game that they didn't win. Now, when Sam Hubbard scored, there was like 11 minutes on the clock. So
yeah, it's not a game winner.
One of the things I try to avoid, as many of you know who've listened to me long enough, is that I don't just go, well, if you take that touchdown off the board, you get like, I don't play. I need to know what the circumstances would have been based for decisions after that.
Yeah.
You know, the perfect example is when a kicker misses a field goal in the first quarter and at the end of the game they lose by two. You go, well, if he made that, they would have won. We don't know that.
Yeah.
Because the game would have been played out differently.
Yeah. And I mean, I love how people are treating it like it's a walk-off. And I was like, it's not a walk-off.
No, there was plenty of time for the Ravens to come back in that game. And they blew it with some bad decisions at the end with clock management. We're going to get to the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next, and then the clock issue coming up as we continue. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio on a Monday, football playoff Monday. Oh, sweet it is. Good, the bad, and the dumb next.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Oh, it's the good, the bad, and the dumb. It's the Monday edition, playoff Monday edition. No matter what Monday edition it is, it's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Let's get the good of the day.
I hate doing this, but, you know, if it was any other weekend, this would be good. I would feel good about this. But if this happens to be this weekend, it's a rough good for me.
Okay.
Because it literally is two Trevor Lawrence stories.
Two?
First one, okay. Yeah, the first one you had mentioned earlier. Trevor Lawrence is just like you and I, because after his historic comeback win, did he go to a club? No. Did he go to some high, secluded place to celebrate? No, he went to a Waffle House.
So I want to correct something. You said he's like you or I. One, I don't go to celebratory dinners after championship games, and I don't. Like, I like Waffle House, but that's not where I would have gone.
I'll rephrase it. He's like the common man.
Okay, I guess, yeah.
And on top of that, he did receive a standing ovation as he walked into the Waffle House.
What did anybody know what he ordered? Like, why? Is there something about the smothered home fries that he likes?
Doesn't that seem on brand with him? Like, he doesn't seem like the type of guy. Like, I don't think he ever would have survived in New York City.
Okay, I don't know much about him. Tell me your perception of him and where it comes from.
My perception of him is that...
Like, where do you get the down-home, hokey, Waffle House feeling from him?
I think it's from the way he talks, what he's been doing with his life. I mean, you know, married before he even got out of college.
Okay.
You know, married before he was even drafted. Remember, that was our big debate. Was he going to hug his mom or his wife first when he got drafted?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I know he's from. I know he had lived in Tennessee, and then he moved to Georgia, and then he was drafted. Recruited by Clemson, and
he didn't go to the draft. So I kind of feel like, you know, he's kind of secluded a little bit. It's like, you know, it's just, you know, football. I just want to do my football, and then I just want to, you know, sit on the couch and catch up on The Bachelorette with my wife.
Yeah. Okay.
I just get that. I don't know. I get that feeling.
Yeah, I just like. There's nothing. I didn't sense that there was anything Hollywood about him.
No,
but
even though he has the looks.
But if you had told me he went to, all right, let me ask you a question. If we had heard a story of him going to a posh Jacksonville nightclub, would you be like, oh no, I would have expected him to go to a Waffle House?
Well, I wouldn't have said Waffle House.
Or would you have said I would have thought he would go through the drive-through of the Bojangles?
Maybe that. Yeah. I don't know. I can't picture him in a club. Like, I can't picture him.
Yeah, I can't either. Well, yeah, you know, I can't either. I'm with you on that. He doesn't seem to be a Hollywood-esque quarterback.
Right.
I agree with that. Waffle House is a very unique step. I mean, it's definitely got.
I've never been.
It's a real experience. It's a great business model. They don't mess around. They get it in and out quick. You see it cooked right in front of you.
So it's like they already know what you're going to order. Is that what you're talking about?
Like there's somebody like right there just making the eggs, and they've got it all laid out. So if you go the two eggs, bacon, hash brown, and toast, they've already got the toast. They've already got the bacon. They've already got the hash browns. They're cooking up the bunch of eggs. If you like them scrambled, it's already done. Slap. There you go. It's done. Get in. And by the way, if you wouldn't mind paying this as you're eating, because we got a whole bunch of people outside that need to sit down. Yeah, and then the great thing about their home fries, their potatoes, is you get them smothered with gravy. That's the best. So
I gotta give it a shot.
It's a late night place too. It's open 24 hours, so you can go at any time. It's just unique breakfast kind of place. It's just a real cool experience.
I gotta check it out. I've never been.
Yeah,
I've never been to a Waffle House, so I know I gotta.
There's one here, and it's the only place in my town to eat at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, we have a couple.
No other place.
There's a couple that I've been to. But wait, one more.
You've been to Waffle House?
No, I'm driven by.
Oh, driven by. Okay.
I do have one more Trevor Lawrence story, and that is that this insane streak is still alive.
Yeah.
He has never lost on a Saturday.
Hey, very cool. That's actually kind of cool. Now, who thought of that and popped that up there? That's brilliant.
They probably looked at it and go, okay, well, you know, he never lost a game in high school. Right? That's easy. He's only lost, he lost two games in college?
Right.
And we can guess which two games he lost in college that they weren't played on a Saturday.
They were part of the playoff system?
Yeah. And so then you look at all you really got to do, I guess, is just look at his Sundays.
Right.
Or his NFL career. It's like, how many games has he played on a Saturday? And I think this was his first one.
I think it was the first one. Good for him.
He put a streak on the line, and he's still, he can be Mr. Saturday, I guess.
Mr. Saturday. That's very good. Trevor Lawrence, wild. That's a fun weekend, man. That's a fun. And you want to talk about crossing the Rubicon? That's kind of crossing the Rubicon, right? To have that kind of game. Like, you got your playoff taste. Now you're in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Now you've done that.
I mean, I think you and I having that argument, or you and I saying that statement over and over again, like, I would just want Trevor to have an NFL game. I think he's done.
He's already, He's had it. He's there now. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is that Cliff Kingsbury now belongs to Bangkok.
Well, what is the circumstances with this? He's got a one-way ticket to Thailand, and he's like, you want to talk to me? Come get me.
No, he pretty much, even the interesting parties, he already told them, I'm not interested.
I'm not interested. Don't even come see me.
Yeah, he went and joined his model girlfriend in Thailand, and took his buyout and left.
That's great. That's great, man.
You know what? I mean, it's not really bad. I didn't know where to put this because it's fascinating to me. I can't blame him at all. The season that you just had where you were literally the finger pointing at you the entire time, and it may not have been your fault. I mean, some things were your fault, but it may not have been entirely your fault, but all the blame was on you, and you're just like, take my money, and I'm just going to go hang out in Thailand where I can get a $2 steak and lobster dinner.
Yeah, I don't blame him one second.
Not at all.
I don't blame him one second. I mean, there's certain professions where you can go to a place like that and just be like, you know what? I'm checking in, and I'll be here for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I got enough money, and here it is.
And it lasts over there. I mean, I don't know how much that buyout was.
Yeah.
But I remember hearing
a shock jock once. He got suspended for some prank he did in New York. And he went to the Bahamas at an all-inclusive resort. He stayed a month with his girlfriend because he was suspended, but he was getting paid. And then he goes, then I was checking out, and I realized I had nothing else to do. So I said to the manager, can I just check in for another month? And they said, yep. And I just stayed another month. He goes, they had nothing to do. He's like, they paid us out, you know, on the suspension. And he goes, I was making a ton of money, and I didn't have anywhere to go or nothing to do.
There was probably some NDA where he couldn't work anywhere.
He couldn't work anywhere. He couldn't get another job until the suspension was over. And he's like, I'm it. That's it. I'm staying here. So if you're Cliff Kingsbury, you take your buyout and you go, you know what? I'm not jumping right back into this.
No.
Why would I jump back into this? I got enough money. I'm going to hang out in Bangkok and I'm going to go out there with my model girlfriend and we're going to have a great time and I'm going to live it up. And you know what? I'm smart enough to know that when I get back, there'll be something. Somebody will call me for something.
Yeah. Oh,
Division II college. I don't know. Whatever. Assistant coach in the NFL. I don't know.
He's not retired. Something.
No, I'll get back to it when I want to get back to it.
What a great position to be in. Like, I'll take 2-3 years off and just do what I want to do.
Just chill, and I won't have any stress about money and where it's going and where it's coming from. Good for him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but you're right. It's a to take my ball and go home and kind of look, right?
Yep.
Good for him.
You're interested? I'm not.
No.
Don't come crawling to me.
Can you imagine somebody having to go to Thailand to go see him?
It literally is every movie scenario. They go and get the spy who's been
yeah, exactly.
You know, or the guy who knows – who the expert in the field who had a traumatic experience once. Not interested. Nope.
Somebody had a really good thing on Twitter that said Brandon Staley seeing Cliff Kingsbury in Thailand.
Yep.
And it was
Shawshank Redemption.
Shawshank Redemption. That actually is really funny.
It is.
It's Brandon Staley might be doing the exact same thing.
Maybe true. We'll see.
Like, give me my money and I'll see you. I'm off to another country. God, that's great. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
Dumb of the day, I mean, help me out with this, okay?
Yeah.
We've got to go back to Chargers-Jaguars because a bettor placed a $1.4 million bet on the Chargers. It was a DraftKings in-game live
bet. So in-game live bet. Okay.
And the odds were terrible, but the Chargers were up 27-0, and he made a $1.4 million bet to win just a little over $11,000.
Okay, so my thought was on this was that the guy had – wanted $11,000 for something ridiculous. And was like, you know what? Why spend it when I can just make it in the next hour and a half when the Chargers win this game?
Right.
I'll take my $1.4 million and I'll make my 11 grand and then I'll go on the trip. I'll take the wife on the European cruise that's costing me $10,000 and I'll just make it in 90 minutes. It's a good investment. It's a quick investment, and I'll just get that money, and then we'll use that. And you lost $1.4 million. Now there are a lot of people who are saying that the bet never happened. That this is phony.
That is okay.
That somebody made it up, but I don't think so.
Don't think so.
Darren Rovell had the page, and pages can be manipulated, but.
That's the part of me it's dumb for me because I don't understand the betting of that kind of logic betting. I could never put that much cash down.
No, $1.4 million on a, there's no sure things in the NFL. And that wasn't 27-0 in the third quarter, which would have paid him out a lot less.
Right.
But he probably looked at that and said, I'll trust my gut here. I think they'll win. Good. I'm glad he hasn't slept in 48 hours.
This is Brett Musburger, and you are listening live to Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio with my main man, Tony D.
I think Brent would have done a more enthusiastic last second half call of the Jags-Chargers game.
He definitely would. Is
that Al Michaels?
Is Al Michaels just old now?
78 years old.
No, I get that.
So he's young enough to still be enthusiastic.
But does he not care anymore?
That could be it.
As he said back, I mean, did the first half of that game just ruin him, and then he had nothing?
And then he had nothing left in the tank. Like where he was like, God, I just can't be. I'm around such bad games, and now I got this one that's 27-0, and then the comeback just doesn't kickstart the engine, if you will. Well, you know what? What a spoiled country we are, where we could have a game like that, and people are like, I didn't like the way the announcers announced it. Like I was barely paying attention to anything they said. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I couldn't believe it. I just could not believe I was watching this epic collapse. And I feel bad for the Chargers because I think my team, the Steelers, I've witnessed more playoff failures than I have successes, right? And I don't even mean Super Bowls. I mean, I'm just talking about big playoff wins. I can probably remember more of their failures than they are their successes. And they've been upset a few times in the playoffs. But the upsets have occurred where you could tell, like, this isn't working. I remember when Jacksonville beat them a couple of years ago. They were converting every third down they saw. The Steelers couldn't stop Blake Bortles and the Jags at all. At all. And they were scoring at will. And you get a feeling like, wait, okay, this is not going their way. I remember the Steelers losing in the AFC title game at home to San Diego with Natron Means and when Dennis Gibson batted down a pass at the goal line. You were like, they're not putting this team away and time is running out. But when you're up, like you said at the start of this show, when you're up 27-0 and you got your feet up and you're just waiting for the game to be over, and it doesn't matter what the score is, it's 27-0, it's comfortable. And then to see it chip away, that's really painful. It's not like it was back and forth and it ended up on a last-second field goal. In a way, you can almost accept that. It was two pretty evenly matched teams, had about the same record, both with young superstar quarterbacks. Each team had its own thing they had to overcome, something that wasn't quite working that well that the quarterback could probably overcome. But when you're up 27-0, the way this league is designed, you have a lot of tools to get a victory. That you run the clock, run it all the way down, every single snap, score again, even if it's a field goal, make it a 5-score game. Like all of these things that are in your favor. You don't even have to match them when they score a touchdown. You just have to make a stop or two. There was only so many possessions the Jaguars were going to have in the second half.
Do what they did in the Waterboy. Remember in the championship game, he started taking knees?
Yeah, right,
in
right.
In the third
yeah.
quarter to keep yeah. the Waterboy off the field? Do that.
Do that.
God, it was but much better was than you throwing a 30-yard pass down the field.
Even when it was 27-7 at halftime, there was still like, okay, he's still up 3 scores, and there wasn't any indication at that point that the Chargers were going to be stopped, right?
There was no indication that all you were going to get in the second half was one lousy, meaningless field goal.
Right, exactly.
Because I can say meaningless now because all it did was make it look like the game was closer than it was. Because that second half, you got blown away.
Yep, exactly. So right now tonight with Dallas and Tampa Bay, the winner of this game is getting San Francisco. So now it is set up with the other three matchups. You've got Jacksonville will be heading to Kansas City. You have got the Bills taking on Cincinnati, which how great is that? The fact that we didn't see it a couple of weeks ago, and now we're seeing it in the playoffs.
In Buffalo.
In Buffalo.
Or should they play that game in Cincinnati?
Well, somebody pointed this out on Twitter as well. God, Twitter was ablaze this weekend. It was so good. Somebody pointed out, I saw it this morning where somebody said, yeah, whatever happened to the neutral site idea for this possibility, right? Go back to Chiefs-Bengals, right? Chiefs-Bills. Chiefs-Bills is going to be played in Atlanta because Buffalo had the advantage over Kansas City, but the Bills finished with a less than winning percentage than Kansas City. So the Chiefs have the number one seed. They got the bye. But if they meet, it's kind of unfair for that game to be played at Arrowhead because the Bills have a canceled game. The same argument could have been made about Bengals and the Bills. Because if the Bengals had won that game and they both won the next week, the Bengals would actually be the 2 seed because they would have had an equal record and they would have won the head-to-head matchup. But because that game was canceled, we don't have a neutral site option for this one, even though fairly we didn't play a game. My argument on that is this. I like the idea and I like where people are going, but the reality of it is this. The Bills were told we're not making that game up. You don't have an opportunity to win that game, to match Kansas City. But Kansas City is going to play 17. You're going to play 16. Now, you have the head-to-head victory already this season. We're going to respect that, but we're going to respect that in this way. You're not going to be hosting the Chiefs because that would be disrespecting their record. We don't know if you would have lost that game to Cincinnati or won that game to Cincinnati. So we're going with the normal procedure of winning percentage, something we haven't had to do in this league for a very, very, very long time, but it's in the rules. However, we're willing to go, but in an issue of fairness, we believe that the game should be played on neutral site. In the Cincinnati the Bills game, because it got canceled, the league is saying both of you played 16 games and this game was canceled. And you know what? Unfortunately, neither one of you got to play against each other. So we're not going to give it a neutral site because the possibility of Cincinnati could have won that game. What if the Bills had won that game? So we're not going to put it on a neutral site because you both played 16 games. we're going to pretend this wasn't even scheduled. And if it's not scheduled head to head in terms of what your record is and what their record is, the Bills get home field. So it's not the same, because the Chiefs had nothing to do with that happened on Monday night. They weren't part of the equation at all. They got to play, and because they got to play and the Bills didn't get to play, they got the half-game edge. In this situation with head-to-head, the league went, what game? And the Bengals could go, it should be on a neutral field because why? Because we could have, what game? The game that was, what game? The game, you can't, what game? You hear what I'm saying? What game? And the Bengals would have to go, yeah, I guess you're right. What game? Meaning it never was played. It doesn't count. We're not going to do what ifs, woulda, coulda, shouldas. We're not going down that road. We're doing this time because there is a level of fairness that we want to respect. The Bills did beat Kansas City. Because I'll tell you right now, if the Chiefs had won that game against the Bills, but somehow, like, that game, like, still, that game would have been an Arrowhead. They would have said, no, that game's an Arrowhead. Sorry. But because the Bills had that head-to-head, that's the way it is. The Bills don't have a head-to-head against Cincinnati because they didn't play. So that's the answer to that question. But nevertheless, it's still going to be a good one.
No, it sets up good, intriguing matchups. Mm-hmm. I mean, going in, I know we'll review the games later in the week, like as we get all the info, but we already have our like snap judgments. And, you know, right now I'll be sitting there going, yeah, the Chiefs should wipe the floor of the Jaguars.
Yeah.
Should be Chiefs Chargers, man.
So clock management was a big issue this weekend as well. Brandon Staley didn't manage the clock particularly well, as we talked about. Also, John Harbaugh didn't manage the clock late in that game, like we talked about. Left timeouts in his pocket. So in case you don't know, Mike McDaniel did not manage the clock very well.
He was the worst, especially at the end. Sorry to say that, Philip, but I mean, that was, God.
Okay, so do we buy the I didn't know it was a first down excuse for having the wrong players on the field?
No.
I don't either.
I think, you know, because, I mean, this is his first foray in this area. I think the moment got too much of him. He'll be better down the road. I don't think, I mean, his job should not be in jeopardy. But I think it'll be one of those things where you look back and go, God, you just, the moment was bigger than you. And you allowed it to get bigger than you.
To me, I think you play 162 games in baseball. So when you get to the postseason, you know when who's supposed to be up and what situations you're going to be going when the pressure's on, right? That's a lot of games to be played. You play a lot of baseball games, so if you need a pinch runner, you know who's been a good pinch runner. You know what circumstances you need to do the double switch, or you need to replace a pitcher, or you need to replace a batter, whatever it is. When you get to the playoffs in the NFL, you have got 17 games under your belt, right? It's a lot of games. It's not 162, but it's a lot of games. That is when you're supposed to be able to say, you know what? In tight situations, when we don't know if we got a first down or not, and it's fourth down, even if it's late in the game, and we may not have that exact scenario at any time during the 17 games that we played, I'm confident in my staff that we do know how to decipher what personnel we need on the field and get that information out quickly. They did not do that at the end of that game. All right, we'll talk more about clock management and why it's so hard. Coming up next, it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Clock management is one thing that every single coach thinks they have down and they don't want to admit at any point that they don't, right? It's like if you are in, I don't know, if you do sales for a living, for example, right? And you've had some success enough to be a sales manager or a sales leader or whatever it is, and there's a conference and it's like how to be a better salesperson, and you're like, I think I should go to that, but I don't want to go to that because I don't want all my peers to know that I need help. Because I've reached the pinnacle of my experience, right? It's not like learning a new technology if you're a doctor or you're a programmer or something. It's just going to a conference to be better at a job people think you're already good at. And I think in the NFL's case, that if the NFL had, let's say, a seminar in Palm Springs on how to manage the clock better in NFL games, I think zero head coaches would attend, because I don't think anybody would want to admit that they need to go to that kind of seminar, even if they do. And we saw it on display. Now, let's look at the Bengals game last night, the Bengals-Ravens game last night. John Harbaugh left a lot of timeouts in his pocket. And now, late in the game, as they were driving down for a potential tying touchdown, there was a situation where they gained a first down with over a minute on the clock, but did not snap the ball again until there was around 33 seconds on the clock. They went huddle, didn't stop it. Now, do I think that that was deliberate? Do I think that they forgot to call timeout? No, I don't think they forgot to call timeout. I think they knew they could call timeout, but they didn't want to. They were within striking distance of scoring. But do you know what has altered a lot of these coaches' mentality? And that is 13 seconds. 13 seconds has thrown a lot of these guys for loops. The ability of Justin Tucker to kick a field goal, for example, makes people worry about the Ravens. The worry about Evan McPherson may not be the same as Justin Tucker, but you get the idea. Guys can kick it further. They don't have to go as far. I think the Ravens realized, we don't want to leave any time on the clock for Joe Burrow, so we're going to take our shots. But the problem is that when you get down to the diciness of it, is that you run plays that are need more time to process or need more time to think, and then you're saving timeouts for something that you may absolutely need. You've taken so much time off the clock, you have to keep one in the bag, because in case you throw it down, you've eaten clock, and then you throw the one play that is down near the goal line and he stops short at the two, and there's 15 seconds on the clock and it's ticking while you reorganize. You're trying to get down as fast as possible, and then you're going to spike it, but maybe it's getting too close. You need that one timeout in the bag to make sure you stop the clock and be able to run a play. That's the danger. But they know that teams can go down the field pretty quickly if you leave too much time on the clock. But it still was a problem, as the Ravens last night just did not save enough time for them to really organize themselves in certain situations. It was a holding penalty, ended up throwing it away on one pass, and then had to throw it in not quite a Hail Mary, because it wasn't like a 60-yard bomb, but they had to throw it up in the air, and it was ended up for grabs, and it almost got caught, but it was just one of those throw it up and hope we catch it at the end. In the Dolphins' case, it's an entirely different situation. The Dolphins were a victim of their own sort of idea of circumstance and making sure the right play was called. And this is where you could make a case that maybe there was the pressure of the moment and the finality of the game lent Mike McDaniel to sort of go, you know what, I got to make sure I call the right play. I want to make sure I get the right perfect play into this game. And so there was a lot of delay of games, or almost delay of games, because it took a while to get the play in, and before you know it, they're still in the huddle with 5 seconds to go, right? That's the problem. Instead of knowing what you want to call and knowing, be confident in what you're calling, I think McDaniel was a victim of his own sort of idea, right? His brain processing so many different ideas on what to run. And I think by the time they sort of, him and the coaching staff, decided what they were going to run, there wasn't a lot of time on the clock to get the ball snapped and in time to make the play. Now, the Dolphins had the fourth down that was close, and they thought that they had gotten the first down, as we were talking about earlier. They thought that they had gotten a first down. They didn't. It was fourth and short. And they were running first down offensive personnel out on the field, believing that they did. And then they realized, no, it's fourth and one, they were still subbing players in with about 12 to 13 seconds remaining. And then they couldn't get the playoff. And there was a delay of game on a fourth and one, a critical fourth and one, with about 3.5 minutes remaining. And they were down in that game by three. So if you're Mike McDaniel, you got to determine, well, how did that happen? Who is on my staff is responsible for down and distance and circumstance, so that we don't have to go back out there and get a delay of game? There should have been the right people out there. So this will plague a lot of coaches. We saw Nathaniel Hackett during the regular season need Jerry Rosberg to be hired to help him handle this. But to the coach's credit, I'll be honest with you, there really isn't a right or wrong way to do this other than when you get penalized given certain circumstances, because you're doing it with philosophy. So challenge the philosophy, not necessarily the coach's inability to manage the clock. Like I was bringing up with Harbaugh. I think Harbaugh managed the clock the way Harbaugh wanted to manage the clock. It ended up being the wrong way to do it, but I honestly think he feared that Joe Burrow and the Bengals, if they left enough time, could get down the field quickly enough with those offensive weapons to kick a field goal to win it.
And I think he's right. I think Joe Burrow is at that level now.
Right? So I think he's right.
But I don't know, with Mike McDaniel, I don't know if I fully believe. I mean, first of all, it bothers me that you know, fourth down personnel versus first down personnel. It's like, you're changing your entire line? There was a whole lot of people running back and forth.
Yeah, there's a whole different set,
How many different people do you have for your first down scenario versus your fourth down scenario?
Well, if you, it's funny. If you go back and watch the film, right, it's like third and two, right? They run this play up the middle, right? And it's fourth and one. It's clearly like it's fourth and one. Now, what does Mike McDaniel, who tells him it's fourth down? Like, who's responsible for telling him everybody is fourth down?
Is there an unknown voice in his headphones going, first down?
It's first. Like, so he needs to know what down and distances it is. He's looking at a whole bunch of charts, you know, play sheets. Is somebody responsible for telling him fourth down, fourth down, fourth down? Because nobody, they didn't even bring it out to measure.
No.
Like, it wasn't like we paused.
And maybe that was part of the problem, too.
They planted the ball at the 49-yard line. No, the 48-yard line. They had to get to the 49. They put it at the 48.5. And nobody on the Dolphins knew it was a first down?
Nobody moved.
And nobody said, oh, this is close. They went, boom, here it is, fourth down. And he's sending first down personnel out there. Now, that's a miscommunication. That is letting the moment get to you a bit.
Well, that was him not watching the game.
Right,
him staring at the cheat sheet that he has and just looking down at that, never looking up and seeing, never looking up once going, hey, guys, this thing still says four. Or this thing says four, not one. What's going on?
Sometimes being too truthful can backfire you, right?
Yeah.
Like, I would have made up a complete – I would have said, why did you have delay? Well – I saw a unicorn flying in from the sky, that was carrying an elephant. And I don't know if anybody else saw that, but that distracted me, and that caused me blindness.
Or
I would rather admit that I saw a mythical creature coming from the sky than admit that I didn't know it was a first down and I sent the wrong personnel in.
Or say the truth. Hey, there was this really attractive woman sitting sitting just behind Michael Irvin and Troy Aikman in the stands. She didn't make a face at all.
She didn't acknowledge that she really was interested.
Yeah.
But
I was wondering, why is she there?
Why is she there? Exactly. And by the way, the fourth down play they called was out of the shotgun.
Why do teams do that? I really do. But Trevor Lawrence, the 2-point conversion he had,
right?
That was one of the most brilliant things I've ever seen.
Oh yeah. That's right.
Use a guy who's almost 7 feet tall to kind of just put his arm over the line.
That's right.
Because you need to do is just kiss it.
That's all you got to do. That's what Tyler Huntley was trying to do in the Ravens game.
Yeah.
Stick the chip out there just enough for next gen to register.
So maybe they know. Do they know it's a chip?
Right.
Did Trevor Lawrence go, I just need to beep.
Was it as surprising to NFL players that there was a chip in the football?
That's
my
point. It's fourth and one. You know what? I mean, just get yourself a tall guy on your team who can do that. Maybe that, basketball players need to come on the NBA in the NFL teams more often.
Now, I just think that there is new ideas of what could happen. I think coaches are afraid of, the 13 seconds. I think it allows them to sort of get a lot of different ideas in their head. And we go, why aren't you calling timeout? And they're like, because you don't want to face Joe Burrow with 48 seconds remaining. But are you playing to the zero buzzer? What are you doing?